Welcome to Essentials Study Group 4. This is a study group on microphones continued and stereo miking. So this is what we're going to talk about today. But before we get into the content we're going to cover, I wanted to remind people of a couple of things. As I said on Monday, payments for those of you on the payment plan are due. It is the beginning of the month, so for those of you on the payment plan, make sure you pay up. Otherwise, you won't be in the course no more. So make sure you do that. And finally, before we move on, does anyone have any questions about what we covered on Monday? Okay, Ray, go ahead.
Can you, if you don't mind, in a private message, just give me the address to send our receipts to? I just forgot what it was.
Sure, no problem. I can go ahead and do that. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Awesome. So real quick, we're going to continue on what we didn't get to cover on Monday, we were going to cover mic accessories and the importance of some of these accessories for all the different mics that we covered and the different pickup patterns. Some of these accessories are more or less important depending on what you're trying to do. So to talk about some of these accessories and some of the more common ones, Justin will give his little presentation on that.
Okay, I've not used this microphone much. I apologize for that with a particularly popping P, and there's a reason for that. So, microphone accessories. You have your microphone. That's great. But there's a bunch of stuff you need to go with it to make it work properly and well. First thing is a packet of silica gel. You get silica gel in tiny little paper packets and they're little crystals. And you keep them when you store a particular type of microphone. Silica gel is used for absorbing water, moisture in the air. It changes color. It's a good water detector. It changes color in the presence of water. But can anyone suggest to me which type of microphone you would need silica gel for?
Damien.
Dynamics.
Anyone else?
I think it's condenser because of the fact that they are active with electricity.
I was going to say condenser.
Yep, condenser is absolutely right. Because of the active electronics within a condenser, because of the way that they work, you need that. Condensers must be stored with silica gel. In fact, if you buy, well, I bought my Rode NT4 microphone, and it comes with a packet of silica gel. And unfortunately, the only way to tell whether your silica gel has been expended is to look at it and see if it's changed. Want to change those regularly. They're quite easy to come by, packets of silica gel, probably the cheapest piece of audio equipment you will ever buy, because everything else is pretty expensive. So that's accessory one. Next one is a mic stand. Why do you think, and this might seem like a very elementary question, but why do you think we would need a microphone stand? Why not just hold it?
Damien and Monica in that order.
Because otherwise when you're recording and you're doing things, it will pick up you handling and moving the mic about.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can actually demo this really easily because I'm a bad instructor. I don't have one. So when I do this, yeah, you get the idea.
Actually, your handling noise is pretty good. I've heard a lot worse. Monica.
Because, well, you don't want your mic to fall, for one, and you don't want it to keep moving when you're talking.
That's absolutely right. Yes, you want to avoid microphone handling noise. If your hand gets cramped and you want to move it on the mic, then the mic is going to pick that up. That's not a good thing. You want the mic on the stand so that your hand doesn't get uncomfortable, so you don't have to keep holding it, so you have both hands free to do other things. Like, we couldn't do these demos if we didn't have mic stand. Like, I'm sitting with my keyboard in front of me because I'm about to play you something, and I need to turn myself up and turn myself down, and if I was holding a mic in one hand, that would become very difficult. So that's one reason to have a stand. Another reason to have a stand is, apparently, and I've read this on vendors' websites, so I'm not sure if this is true. Perhaps Derek can speak to the veracity of this. But apparently stands, especially manufactured for microphones, affect the microphone's frequency response least. So, you have your microphone. If you grip it in an improper way, you are stopping it from resonating, from vibrating as it should. You are perhaps crowding its capsules, and all kinds of bad things can happen. Stands supposedly reduce that problem. I can't speak either way to whether they do or not. Derek, do you have anything to say on that?
Well, microphones that are very sensitive could actually pick up your hand tremor. So while it may not change
the... noise, but would they affect frequency response?
Well, it, in that case, may not affect the frequency response, but it may overdrive a preamp, which would, of course, affect the sound of the mic or the sound of whatever you're recording. If the recorder can't handle sound transference from anything a mic is contacting, or if the preamp can't deal with that kind of voltage from the microphone, of course you're going to distort. I think in some cases, maybe an omnidirectional microphone could suffer from being held but I think you'd have to have a very, very, very large hand for that to happen.
The upshot of all this is that stands are good, and they are flexible, and they are portable. And I'm going to take just a couple of minutes to talk you through how a stand works. For those of you who haven't used them before, if you want to do anything professional, particularly like vocal work or sound design where you're recording ambiences, stands are going to be important. So stands stand on three legs, a tripod. And stands are made such that it's metal inside metal inside metal, like an aerial telescopes out. So you can store it as small as possible, and you can telescope it up high if you need to. So you have your telescope, then you have a little screw, a little Allen key type thing at the base. And you unscrew that to let the base fall, so you can unfold the legs. You unfold the legs first, then you unscrew the base screw. The base drops to the floor. Then you have a little plastic thing just below where the microphone sits, and you can hear handling noise because I'm doing this. You can unscrew that, and that will adjust the vertical height of your microphone, and it can go up pretty high. When fully extended, the stand is now at my head height standing. But the good thing is it can go even further. There's an Allen key, a little screw thing just behind where the mic screws onto the stand. You can get holders to screw on with the mics. You screw that holder into the stand, and just behind that there's another Allen key, and you can unscrew this other little thing and extend it further on an arm that's like a mini boom pole. And what that does is it means that you can make the mic lower than the stand's actual height if you want, or higher. Or you can make it horizontal. So what we now have is a situation where the stand's vertical pole is fully extended to my head height, and its arm coming off it is fully extended, pointed at me, and I can lower it down and down and down and down, and the mic is now resting on my bed. So what all this gives you, and this can all fold back together, what all this gives you is tremendous flexibility and tremendous portability, because everything will down into each other, so you can carry a stand under your arm as one long pole with three closed legs at the top, rubber legs for the tripod. If anyone has any questions, now's the time to ask them while I just reset this mic configuration.
Does it matter what kind of stand you get? Like if you have a microphone and it comes with a stand you don't like, or does that matter? Or
it does, because some microphones are heavy. So depending on the microphone that you get, you want to make sure you get a stand that can support your microphone. So for heavier microphones, a lot of people tend to want to get the stands with the rounded base on the bottom instead of like a tripod stand, because it might tip over.
I've only ever seen the tripod ones, so I actually thought they were all the same. So I learned something there. So now I have the stand reset to a configuration where I can sit on my bed and talk to you wonderful people. And I've been able to swivel the microphone around such that it points at me. But maybe you want to walk around and you want to be able to hold the mic and point it at people in such a way that it won't hear your tremor. You can do that with something called a pistol grip, which can form part of a shock mount if you want it to. So it can either secure to your stand, and it cushions the mic from the stand being knocked, or you can hold it in your hand. And it's a bit of a difficult... How would you describe a pistol grip, Derek? Can't really think of how to explain how that looks.
Well, if you've seen a gun, you know, you have this piece in your hand that's sort of curved to fit the contours of your hand that you can just naturally hold. Sort of like a gun, but as opposed to the gun having a barrel, it has a microphone mount. And on that microphone mount, you can put anything you like, any sort of microphone, any sort of shock mount, which we'll talk about in a bit. And so the pistol grip usually is made in such a way that it diffuses contact. So if your hand moves, that tremor doesn't go through the mic. If you bump your hand against something by accident, it will make a noise on your recording, but it'll be a lot softer than if you were to just directly bang the mic into something. Some of them have little boom poles on them, so you can hold your hand closer to you in a more comfortable and natural angle and have the arm extend, as opposed to you're trying to hold a microphone out to capture someone's voice because you don't have a mic stand. If you just stand in one place with your arm extended, even if you're not holding anything, you're going to get tired very quickly. And so this keeps that from being a problem. So there's my sort of take on those. I don't have any of them because I've never needed them, but they are useful to have.
So a boom pole is like a long arm that you can track your microphone on. You can attach the microphone to this arm and you can move it around and you can be a long way away from it, and it can swivel and it can extend and it can retract longer than the pole on a stand. And this is really useful for tracking moving actors, moving vehicles, moving animals, things like that. It's useful for all of those kind of things. But let's move on to another category of accessory. I was out in 2010 making recordings. I made this one. What's wrong with it?
Damien.
Lots and lots of wind noise.
Lots and lots of wind noise. The sound designers and broadcasters and other live recordists' nightmare. Microphones are very sensitive to wind. It's part of the reason why I'm so quiet, because I've not been really, really close to my microphone. So, if we get a proper distance away from the microphone, so I can talk into it, you can hear all my breath. Isn't that lovely? Isn't that a great sound? What we have to mitigate that problem, what this particular microphone that I'm using came with, and this might be a bit loud in a minute, is a windscreen. It's a little piece of foam. You'll have seen them on electret condensers you can buy that you can fit over the capsules of the mic. It's really important you use these because condenser microphones are fragile and the diaphragms can break if they are blown on too strongly. So let's put on this windscreen and compare the difference. There. Now we have a windscreen on. Windscreen on. And you can't hear my breath anymore. Or at least not as much.
It changed your voice, though. Well, that's kind of impressive.
It did. There may be another reason for that. It might not be just the windscreen, and we'll get to that in a minute. But this has done quite a bit to improve my voice. It's harder now for me to pop my P's, but it's still doable. This is not a perfect windscreen. What I really need is a proper pop shield, which is a frame with a piece of fabric stretched across it, which you clamp to your stand across the mic, and it disperses the air that comes to it. Perhaps Jessica or Derek would like to give a more detailed description of a pop shield, being as I don't own one. That's the basic principle.
You pretty much got it. You basically place most of the pop shields that I've seen are kind of circular in shape, and you put the arm, it's kind of like a frame with a stretchy sort of material over the frame that's kind of on an arm that you can then hook onto your mic stand and place in front of your microphone, mm-hmm. or in front of the end of your microphone if it's an end address. And
are you using one now, Jess?
I am not. So that's what you would, it's how you would use a pop shield, and that's what they kind of look like. Another kind of homemade pop shield that we discovered recently, oddly enough, I would still definitely recommend you go out and spend the $5 or $10 to get a pop shield. I promise you they're worth it. But if you just don't have the money right now, and for kind of minor plosives, you can actually take a number 2 pencil and place it vertically against your condenser microphone with a rubber band exactly in the center of the capsule, and the wood will diffuse some of the air away from the diaphragm.
So, that's that. Windscreens and pop shields. Pretty good for vocal situations, pretty good where you want to broadcast. I sound reasonable now. There's a bit of breath. You could probably get rid of most of it in post if you wanted to expend the time on doing that.
I'm actually using a pop sock, or, you know, windscreen, as you called it. The other thing I wanted to suggest, especially because you were just talking about pop socks and windscreens, if you can, especially if you don't have a pop shield, with pop socks, if you talk kind of with the mic sort of on the side of your face instead of in front of it, you can actually stop a lot of plosives that way as well, and let the air just kind of go across the microphone instead of right into it.
What you can also do, this is fine for vocal situations, for studio situations, like I'd use a pop shield if I wanted to do any professional stuff here. What you can also do is you can get a wind jammer. And this is kind of more for the sound designers and outside broadcasters now, because you can still hear my breath. It's not diffused to the point where my breath is inaudible. So you can get a wind jammer, otherwise known colloquially as a Wookiee condom. It's a great, like, furry glove, really, that either velcros or does up with a drawstring, and it goes right over the body of your mic. And that's what I was using for the recording you heard in 2010. Popsock would have come off under the tightness of the windjammer. So basically what I had was my mic on a stand and the windjammer velcroed up tightly around it. That's not the best way to do things. So the full field recordist's solution, what I have since purchased, like that wasn't even a very windy day. That was kind of a mild breeze. The full field recorder situation is to get a stand onto which you attach something called a Zeppelin. Now, there are different designs of Zeppelin. Some must be stored upright and involve rubber bands. Mine doesn't have that. Mine is sort of a pistol grip shot mount within a cylinder, a plastic cylinder with ridges on it, with holes in and fabric on the inside of those holes to diffuse the air, to keep the air from the mic whilst keeping things transparent. And at each end of the tube, so you can put the microphone in, there is a lid. Now how, if you have your microphone secured in such a tube, do you plug it in? You need something called a comm box. So built into the inside of this Zeppelin, there is an XLR in socket and an XLR out socket, which dangles outside the Zeppelin so you can connect it to your machine. Let's now attach the lid to this Zeppelin, which I had ready fitted. That's maybe why my voice sounded slightly different as I leaned in and put the Popsock on the windscreen, because the microphone is also in a tube. First, let's put this on. Now, this is me talking into the Zeppelin. This is not the appropriate way to record yourself if you're doing vocals or podcasting, but it is the appropriate way to be outside in the elements recording sound and outside vocals. So now let's blow. What you hear mostly is the sound of my breath against the plastic tube. You hear far less of the wind on the mic directly, that horrible bassy rumble that contaminates recordings. Now, if I was going to go out, what I would do is I would take the pop sock off and I would put the lid of the Zeppelin on, and you can hear there's still a good deal of diffusion. I'm not popping like I was, even with the windscreen off. And I would put a wind jammer over this, the furry mitten type thing that I talked about. And what if I want to record in a hurricane? What if I want to record in storm force winds? That isn't enough even then. There's something else called a high wind cover that you can put on either over the wind jammer if you're extra cautious, or instead of the wind jammer, and that diffuses the air in a different way. Now, what do you imagine might be the drawback of all these different types of coverings? Not so much the Zeppelin, but the wind jammer and the high wind cover. A sheath that fits tightly over this Zeppelin made of fur or some other material that doesn't have holes in it.
Damien had a question.
No, I was actually going to answer that question. The more protection you have over the mic, the more it's going to cut out natural sound as well as unwanted sound.
What sort of natural sound specifically would you guess?
Could be anything. From talking, for example, it'll cut out various elements when you're talking. Just general stuff, really.
It wouldn't cut out talking altogether. It's not like it would prevent the microphone from hearing quiet sounds as such. But if you put your hands over your ears, lightly, how do things sound?
Kind of like tunnelled.
Kind of tunnelled. I would say more muffled. The high frequencies suffer. And that is, to a certain extent, what happens with wind jammers. This is why I would always recommend that you buy professional ones, because they are designed to minimize high frequency degradation. They're made of materials that should do that. Derek talked about something called a dead kitten in our preparation for this lecture, which is the wind jammer, I believe, for the Rode M5. Is that correct, Derek?
No, it's just a generic wind jammer that Rode makes. It's called the dead kitten. And okay. I want one.
And
if
I
for
saw,
no other reason.
I want one.
I saw, so Rykote, Rykote, are the industry standard leading manufacturers of wind jammers. Like, they're used in films and stuff. I have Rykote stuff. It costs a fortune. Like this Zeppelin comm box, because I need to get a special comm box because this is a stereo mic. This Zeppelin comm box, wind jammer, and high wind cover, I think it cost me like £400. It was a long time ago I bought it, but yeah, it cost me £400. But it's good. It means I can make far better recordings. There was a comparison done, I think, between a Rykote wind jammer and a dead kitten, and I think the dead kitten came out best. Now, these wind jammers, just a little interesting fact to finish this section on, They come with a little hairbrush. I've got a nice little hairbrush to brush out the fur on my Wookiee condom. It's really cool. It's a manly hairbrush because the bristles retract. You pull this little lever thing and it goes shh, and the bristles retract so it lays flat and then you pop them out. So it's cool, so you don't have to feel embarrassed about brushing the hair on your microphone. Why do you think you would want to comb the fur out on a windjammer? You'd comb out the fur so that it lies flat against the mic. If it's all sticking up in tufts and clumps, the wind can get a hold of it and ruffle it, and then the purpose is defeated. So you want a nice flat surface to minimize wind interference. So that's a lot of accessories. Silica gel. Anyone who owns a professional condenser with which they want to do serious work should have some silica gel to go with it. You have mic stand for stability, security, and lack of microphone handling noise and hand cramp, particularly if you're recording in the same place for a prolonged period of time. You can also use a pistol grip to minimize wind noise, but it doesn't eliminate the stability problems and doesn't eliminate your hand cramping problems. You have wind socks to go over the end of your microphone. You have pop shields to clamp across the front of your microphone to disperse the wind. And you have zeppelins, which encase the microphone in a reasonably acoustically transparent manner. Wind jammers to go over them and high wind covers to go over them in particularly windy situations. You have shock mounts, which is basically like a pistol grip on a stand, basically a means of cushioning and securing the microphone against stand knocks. See, I'm bumping the stand, and I'm bumping it quite hard. Oh, you heard that. I really socked it then. These kind of gentle wobbles. They don't... See, I'm constantly rocking the stand now, and the whole Zeppelin thing is wobbling in front of my face. But it doesn't sound too bad. You'd still have to edit it from a recording, but it's not going to clip things, which is good. So, does anyone have any questions on any of these accessories?
After the question, can I talk about two other accessories? Because you talked about field recording, so I wanted to expand on the vocalist side a little bit. So,
absolutely.
Someone had a question.
If you've only got like a portable recorder with its own internal mics, what accessories can you get to protect them from windy days out?
Rycote does wind jammers for the iPhone. So if you're really serious about wanting to record portably, you can get wind jamming solutions for devices with internal microphones. Yep. Whether it's worth it is another question entirely, given the quality of internal microphones on recorders, given what you're making those recordings for. That would be obviously a cost-benefit analysis for individual customers to do. Personally, I would never buy a wind jammer for my Galaxy device. I would just deal with the wind noise. But, you know, it depends what you need it for, how important the recordings you're making are.
Some of your field recorders as well, some of your Olympus recorders, some of your Zoom stuff, they actually also come with accessory packs, which can include a wind jammer in them. You can buy it for an extra $50 to $100, depending on what you're buying. And so that also helps for your Olympus and your Zoom and other recording solutions that are portable like that. So Justin talked about Zeppelins and how important they are and how they encase the microphone and things. You have similar sorts of things for vocalists. Obviously, you want to treat your spaces if you can, but if you can't, for whatever reason, if you just don't have the money or you just don't know how to treat your spaces, you can get portable things called vocal booths. And some of them aren't so portable either, but a lot of them, more and more of them are becoming that way, that actually kind of sit. Well, they either sit on your mic stand or they sit on your desk because they're kind of a mic stand of their own. And then you place the mic inside the vocal booth. And that way the mic is basically surrounded and you just stand or sit in front of the little portable vocal booth and put your face inside of it and speak into your microphone. And that will dim a lot of the reflections from the room and stuff if you're trying to do a vocal. Obviously, this isn't always going to work. And they do have smaller things called deflection filters, I said it wrong, that do basically the same thing. They're small and they're just kind of clear plastic things that go around your microphone, and they're cheaper than vocal booths, but they're meant to do the exact same thing. The difference mainly is that the vocal booths have, if any of you guys have ever seen a professional recording studio and the walls, how they're treated, they have this spongy stuff. I don't actually remember what it's called, but your vocal booths actually have this spongy stuff on the sides that deflect sound.
And I just want to say I didn't know anything about portable vocal booths until Jessica mentioned them to me, and I really want to get one. They will be useful not only for musicians, but for voiceover artists and things, because acoustic treatment of spaces can cost astronomical amounts if you want to do it well, and you're probably never going to emulate the professional studios. So from what I understand, from what Jessica's told me, portable booths would give you a little bit of an edge. A smaller space means less space to acoustically treat, means hopefully a better sound. Do you have one, Jess?
I do not. I'm actually looking at getting one from Monoprice, though, which is about $70. And it's gotten nothing but good reviews. The other thing you can do as well, because one of the problems with some of these portable booths is you can place the booth and then place like some clothes or a curtain or something that will keep the sound from behind you. Because that's one of the problems with some of these booths is you have everything all nicely kind of closed off in front of you and on the sides, but you don't always have everything behind you deflected off. So if you can find a way of putting like one of those soft shower curtains on the walls, or a blanket, or clothes, like if you're near a closet, that'll deflect the from behind you.
And this is what we were talking about the other week in terms of diffusion and absorption. In fact, I don't think that got recorded because that was in the study group that broke. But if you have materials that will diffuse the sound waves, you can harsh delay sounds into sort of more soft reverb. If you have absorb, it sucks the sound away and you reduce echoes. And both are a good thing. Any questions?
Adam.
Are we going to cover clip-on and lavalier microphones?
We may write wiki articles on them, and you are welcome to research them yourself. And if you find useful information, you can give it to us and we will add it to the wiki. However, given the tremendous amount of stuff that we have to get through, we probably won't be covering those in classes or study groups. I mean, everything that I've just talked about was supposed to be covered in Monday's class, so you can see how crammed the schedule is. But we will endeavour to put up some resources about those at some point during the semester.
All right.
Okay, so hopefully you understand microphones now. Hopefully you understand the type of microphones there are. You have dynamic and condenser. Hopefully you understand that condensers are better for quieter, more detailed sounds, and dynamics are better for really loud sounds. You have different pickup patterns that are useful for different applications, and hopefully you understand all that. So, instead of just one microphone, let's add two microphones to the mix, because, let's face it, mono recordings are kind of boring. I always used to feel that way as a child. Whether I wanted to listen to a particular thing would depend, in a disproportionately large part, when I was of a certain age, on whether it was stereo or mono. So if you want to capture a stereo space like this, what you need is a stereo microphone, or a stereo microphone array. And I'm going to talk about the first type, a type which actually I wouldn't be seen dead using because of the difficulties involved in it, the spaced pair stereo configuration. And this is the simplest, really, the simplest configuration, because you just have two microphones and you plug them into two microphone sockets on your recorder and you set them up on two microphone stands and away you go. One feeds into the left channel, one feeds into the right channel, anything directly between the two microphones will be in the center. We heard that recording that Derek showed us a couple of weeks ago with the stereo recording at Bell Labs. That was people walking between two microphones, recording to two different channels. And that's how it works. Now, this is double the setup time, which is why I wouldn't do it. And this is something that I was going to mention in the accessories section, actually. Get good at assembling and disassembling your equipment, your stands, your Zeppelins, your windsocks, your recorders and stuff. Get good at it. Practice it. I always, when I'm going out field recording, equate it to soldiers. They practice disassembling, cleaning and reassembling their guns, and they see how quickly they can do it. Studio time costs money. People's time that you might be interviewing costs money. A sound that you might want to record isn't going to hang around forever. So get good at putting together your stuff. And obviously with a spaced pair configuration, you have double the stuff to put together. So I showed you an example in last week's study group of a spaced pair stereo microphone configuration. I showed it to you to highlight a specific type of problem. So let's think about this. You have sound waves reaching one microphone, and you have sound waves reaching the other microphone a little bit later. What might the problem be? What audio defect might be introduced with this configuration?
Adam?
Yeah, maybe possible unintentional phasing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Phasing is bad. Phasing is very difficult to correct once it's happened at the recording stage. You get that horrible whistly comb sort of ringing comb filtering effect. We don't want it. So if you are going to use the space pair configuration, this is a configuration which I personally would not use. That does not mean you should not. That does not mean it is bad. Lots of professionals use it to very great effect. But you have to make sure that the distance your microphones are apart captures everything that you want to capture in a way that does not introduce phase. So you have to play with the distance between your mics and get it right. This is actually one of the advantages of the space paired method, is that you can widen your stereo field as wide as you want within the reason of the length of the cables, or make it as narrow as you want. Just be aware phase. And there are formulae to emulate spaces properly and ways to mathematically avoid phase. I don't know any of those. I don't think any of us does, any of us instructors. So critical listening all the way, allow yourself plenty of setup time and be familiar with the quirks of your gear. And that's pretty much... Oh, there is one other very important thing about spaced pair configurations. The microphones must be a matched pair. Now, what do you think that means? And don't say they must be the same. In what aspects must they be the same for a spaced pair stereo configuration to work and to accurately reproduce what you are recording?
Damien?
They have to be the same type and pickup pattern.
Yep.
Major dings.
True, but go even further.
Probably at the same level.
Yes, we're getting there. They have to be the same sensitivity. That's right. So you could buy two Rode NT5s. You could order on two separate days two Rode NT5 condenser microphones. But it's much better if you get a matched pair, because you will have matched their sensitivity. Be a little bit more specific. I'm looking for a tiny bit more from anyone. What must be matched in a matched pair? The frequency response. The frequency response of the microphones must match, or your stereo field will be mismatched. So let's say that microphone A has a peak at 200 Hz, microphone B has a dip at 200 Hz, and let's say microphone B has a peak elsewhere and a trough elsewhere, and so it continues. It's not good enough. Your stereo spread will sound all strange, because there will be peaks and troughs for each microphone in each field. So not only must they be the same type, the same pickup pattern, they must be the same make, and they must be the same sensitivity. So if one was a lot more responsive than another, then everything would sound skewed towards that microphone in the stereo field. And they must be of the same sensitivity across the entire frequency response. So if one goes up at a certain place, if one colours the sound in a certain way, the other one must colour the sound in, as near as possible, exactly the same way to exactly the same degree. So a matched pair is what you need for a good spaced pair stereo configuration. That's all I have on spaced pairing. Does anybody have any questions on it? Or do Derek and Jessica have anything they would like to add?
Ray has a question.
Ray. Sorry. You said that they don't necessarily have to be the same microphone. I get that. But if you're looking for everything to be the way, you know, the frequency and stuff to match, why wouldn't you want to use the same microphone?
No, I said they did have to be the same. Same make, same type, same pickup pattern. Manufactured as a pair. Like I say, it's no good buying two Rode NT5s. You need a matched pair of Rode NT5s. A pair of Rode NT5s, or whatever the microphone is that you are using, that have been tested and proved to be within whatever the acceptable margin is, the same in terms of sensitivity and frequency response. They must be the same. So if I gave a contrary impression, I'm very sorry. Matched pair means exactly that. They must be twins, right down to the smallest possible detail. Well, I'm going to hand over to Derek to talk about the next type of stereo-ness. And over to you, Derek.
So if you have a spaced pair of microphones, you've got two mics, you have two stands, you're trying to get stuff captured. What would you say, guys, would be the type of microphone that would be the easiest to get going? Oh, I'm trying to record the soundscape. I got all these sounds going on. I want to record them. Don't know where stuff's going to come from. Don't know. I just know that I have two stands and two mics, and I'm going to put these up. What do you think would be a...
Ray has a thought. And Adam.
And Ray and Monica.
Go ahead, guys.
Sorry, omnidirectional. I turned off my mic.
So you had a zero-directional microphone. All right.
Any other guesses? I was going to say the same thing.
Very good. Any others?
Yeah, I was just going to say omnidirectional condenser.
Yep.
Match pair.
That's just the easiest way to get things going. But did you know that it is possible to have microphones that are omnidirectional about 8 inches apart with a wide stereo image? You can get this effect with any stereo miking, which involves accessories that put sort of a baffle in the middle between the two mics. So, who's heard the term binaural before?
I have. I just don't know much about it.
Okay, and Damien has as well.
Yes, he says in chat. People have.
Okay, so binaural, in its literal sense, to be conducted and recorded properly, is a very bizarre-looking thing, and I've seen one. It's basically a mannequin head with microphones in its ears, with omnidirectional microphones in its ears. The shape of the ear shapes the sound that is picked up by, and just as importantly, rejected by the microphones. So the shape of the forehead, the shape of the back of your head, the shape of your ears shape the sounds that are rejected by each of your ears, not just the sounds that are picked up by each of your ears. And that shaping, which is just given to us as a gift as a result of the creation process that scientists took decades and decades to recreate, is then able to be captured by microphones in the ears of these binaural heads and stored or sent to your friends or to whatever. Adam has a question.
No, just a quick comment. The first time I heard this, and it was the Stephen King, The Mist drama. I don't know if anyone's heard that, but they used the Kunstkopf binaural sound experience. It was pretty well done.
Yep, that's what I was thinking about.
If you play Papa Sangre 2 and you're in your iPhone, it uses actually a binaural engine and all the sounds go around and stuff.
There's another game called Audio Defense by the same company that I find particularly fun. That is a zombie game and you shoot stuff and things blow up in fun ways and before they kill or be killed kind of thing. But you hear stuff sneaking up behind you and things. And it's very cool. There's a problem with binaural. It is not compatible with speakers. It does not sound very good in speakers. Sounds amazing in headphones. But if you are listening to binaural in speakers, it doesn't sound very good. I do not know of a way to make binaural sound good in speakers. Other things that we will talk about do. Quasi-binaural, for example, does. Quasi-binaural is a way of establishing the rejection and some of the reflection of the head between two omnidirectional microphones without all of the phasing tricks existing. And so you can get, with quasi-binaural, a binaural sense, almost. But you sacrifice some of the depth and some of the 3D in exchange for compatibility with speakers and with headphones. It will work well in both. So from a sound designer perspective, from an ambience perspective, quasi-binaural is cooler overall. One of the ways to do this is to use a Jeclyn disc. A Jeclyn disc, which I had one built because I was cheap and I wanted to pay about $50, not $300 or $400, is basically a plexiglass disc, about a foot in diameter, with a mount on the bottom that goes on the stand. And on the disc in its center are mounts for microphones, one on each side. So the disc is a baffle between the two microphones. And so you have this one very strange looking piece of plexiglass on a stand with a mic on each side of it. And provided those are omnidirectional microphones, they will get you quasi-binaural. I was recording outside noises years ago with mine and some mics on it, and a fly buzzed by. And listen to this fly and listen to the ambience and tell me as soon as I get over here, right over there, tell me everything you guys hear about it, everything you notice, and just say stuff as you hear it. This is a free-for-all in this particular case. Just listen for the fly before you say anything. Thoughts?
You can hear the outside a lot.
It made me think it was a real fly.
Well, it was.
Like, in the room.
Oh, right. Yeah, there you go.
You can hear it, like, going from your left to right side of your ears.
Good.
I only mainly heard it in my left ear.
Yeah, I only heard it in my left.
Yeah. Did you hear it go behind you a little bit, though?
Yes.
Listen to it again, see if you can hear it kind of go behind you for a second.
Kind of.
All right, well, here's another one.
Tiny bit.
Here's another one that I did by accident. You try to set up all these demos and record all these things, and then by accident you get things you never even anticipated. But a plane flew over. This was later that same day. Again, quasi-binaural recording with a Jeclyn disc and the microphones like 8 inches apart. What all do you guys notice about the plane and the ambience?
Sounds like it's going from left to right, and it sounds like it's slightly behind me. Pretty cool.
Yep. Anything else?
Crickets?
Mm-hmm. Some outside type of noises?
Very good. Now, I noticed something else. Not a lot of stuff in the center. Not a very focused sound. Very cool sound, but not a very focused sound. There's not a center to the sound. It just is, if that makes sense. That's the only way I can really describe
kind
it.
Of a
there's
hole.
No center point. There's a hole in the middle. Did you guys notice that too?
Yes.
So in my confidence in 2008, because in 2008 I was awesome because I had one microphone set up that was cool, that recorded in stereo. I was set. I was good. I was ready to go. I volunteered to record a Christmas concert at the university that I went to. And I did, with great success. It was a Christmas thing. There were people. There was an orchestra. It was great. It was cool. And that went really, really well. And so I came back for my friend to record her symphonic band concert in 2009. I'm telling you this as a setup because I want you to listen to what happened when I attempted to record the concert. I actually had the mics close to the stage. I had gotten permission to do this. They were well placed. But what's the problem?
Are they off a bit?
It's part of it.
It sounds like it's behind me.
There's more coming in the left ear.
Mm-hmm. The problem, the band isn't behind...
Echo.
Me slash the listener slash the microphone, but the whole backstage area with a wall to reflect the sound was definitely behind the band. And with the mics being omnidirectional, guess what was just as much to the attention of the microphones? That back wall. So, one size does not fit all. Binaural and quasi-binaural. Plus, the fact is that the band was on part of the stage. The entire auditorium was captured in that picture there, but nothing was zoomed in on the part of the stage on which the band resided. So, they liked it, but I didn't. So, my confident one solution for stereo recording experience that got shattered. So, to research, cardioid microphones. How can we use those? Well, there are two ways to use cardioids, because we want a more directional and a more focused sound. XY and ORTF.
I would just like to add that for recording stereo things, sound designers are more likely to use, or sound recordists, I should say, from what I have read, are more likely to use supercardioid mics, that's shotgun mics that we touched very briefly on last week, or on Monday, I should say, or cardioid mics in a spaced pair. So even with spaced pair, sound recorders are more likely to use cardioids than omnis. Omnis are good for some things and definitely obviously good for binaurals, as Derek has said, but for spaced pair work, sound recorders are using cardioids, apparently. XY is basically really cool, and this is favorite type of stereo recording. No phase problems, as with binaurals on speaker, and monocompatibility problems and so on, potentially. But you have one microphone and two capsules. So I'm using the Rode NT4. This is the mic that a lot of sound recordists are using. It's expensive from a consumer point of view. I think it cost me about £400, I forget. But it is one microphone on one stand, and it is calibrated such that there are no phase problems. So I can be over here, or I can be over here, or I can pan myself back and forth just by moving my head however I want to. And everything is cool, everything is fine. Disadvantage is there is a fixed stereo field. And in the case of the Rode NT4, it is a narrow stereo field, relatively speaking. So you don't get a very wide stereo image. But no phase problems, no setting up to stand. Everything much more portable. And this is a good general purpose condenser, cardioid condenser microphone with actually quite a good noise tolerance for a condenser mic. It can take up to 139 decibels, which is pretty much everything short of gunshots and fireworks and at close range and things.
The way, especially for those who are actually interested in trying to set up XY configurations, you're generally going to use, they say generally two small diaphragm cardioids, but, you know, that's, I guess that depends what you have, but this is what they generally say is two small diaphragm cardioid condensers. You set them up at an angle between 90 to 135 degrees so that the capsules of the microphones can coincide at a single point. So you can actually narrow or widen the stereo field depending on what you're trying to do. But what the point he is trying to make out or say to you is that it is a fixed angle once you set it up at that coinciding point.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you buy microphones in this configuration, you don't make them. But you can get actually XY microphones with variable stereo field configurations. There is a stereo shotgun mic made by Sankin, which has a whole bunch of different configurations in it. The disadvantage is it's very noisy. I covet it. Now, I don't know if you can hear what I'm playing here. Can you hear those fireworks?
Certainly can.
That is just an example of something recorded with the Rode NT4. So even though it is a narrow stereo field, it is still pretty good, I think. I don't actually notice that it is narrow. So I'm very famous in cavi circles for my bird love of recording birds. And this is one of the things that I recorded in my garden. And this was done with XY. Anyone have any questions?
Comment.
Mm-hmm.
Notice how focused it is. It's a very nice stereo image, but you can tell where things are in it.
You can hear some things above you, though. I'm sure you can.
Monica had a question.
Oh, no, I was just going to comment that it sounds so clear and really, really rich.
Yeah. It's a good mic, this mic. I would recommend it if you can afford it. If you want to do the kind of work that I do, which is field recording and things, it's not much use for vocal work. But if you want to go out and about with a mic, record ambiences and so on, this is a good mic. There are better. There are less noisy mics. But yeah, this is a good entry-level professional field recording mic.
But Derek is right. The XY configuration has a very focused, kind of centric stereo field. Like, you can definitely hear the stereo separation and things, but it's very central if you listen to it. And there's an importance on why he pointed that out. So,
has anyone seen the Zoom H1 or H6 recorders? This is relevant to XY. I am curious, though. Just, has anyone seen them? Seen the Zoom H1 or the H6 and looked at their microphones?
I haven't.
Okay. Because last semester we had a lot of H1 users in here, so that's why I asked. But the H1 has a very exposed XY mic array. And you can look at it and you can see how that works. You can see that the two mics touch and kind of point in towards each other. So, let's see, how could, you know...
It's basically a rectangular little recorder, and it has, over the top, a little sort of...
like a cage.
Plastic housing. And inside the housing, there are these little cylindrical microphone capsules, and they're literally placed kind of across each other, like an X.
And they point inward towards each other. So... that actually kind of makes crosshairs. And if something is in the focal point of those crosshairs, it's in the center. And obviously, if it's off to one or the other side, it's panned left or right. So it's a very linear, very focused stereo configuration.
Adam had a question/comment.
Yes.
I saw the Olympus recorder that had a little mic plugged in, and it looked like two mics kind of back-to-back. Would that be a XY configuration? I forgot the model number of the Olympus, but it was one of the little portable Olympus digital recorders.
I'll play it safe and say more than likely.
Mine's a Roland recorder.
Roland and Fostex and a couple in Tascam do this thing where they have omnidirectional mics in their recorders next to each other with no spaced baffle between the two mics. And so who would want to guess what would happen if you had omnis with nothing in as a sort of a baffle between the two and you just had them close together with an omnidirectional mic with two omnis? The effect is practically no stereo image because the mics are omnidirectional and they're picking up almost the same material at the same phase, at the same angle, everything. So even if you're directly in one omnidirectional microphone, you're fairly close to the other one. So it's going to pick you up almost as well. So that's why stereo miking with omnis has to have something in the middle, unless it's a spaced pair. So XY, we've heard XY, we like XY. It's cool. It's nice. It's compatible with speakers. It's compatible with headphones. There, on some occasions, can be cases where certain things will phase out, but it takes very specific scenarios to create a problem where you have phase issues with XY because of the fact that everything is zooming into a focal point in the center. So to move on from XY, we can widen things out a little bit. So take the two microphones, virtually, in your mind, and point them towards something. But as opposed to bringing them in toward each other, bring them out. So now we go into geometry. Oh boy. You have basically a 110-degree angle, so it's like a little wider than a corner. So if you were to like stand up and put your arms straight out in front of you and then sort of move your arms a little farther apart, you would be doing what essentially one would do with a microphone stereo bar if you were using it for ORTF. So you guys kind of picturing that? So two mics, one stand, the mics are pointed out at a little wider than a 90-degree angle, as opposed to two mics, one stand, two mics, one recorder, with the mics pointing in toward each other. You're pointing the mics out from each other. You've sort of inverted what's going on.
So whereas the mics face inward on an XY configuration and they're more centric, the ORTF mics kind of fan out. They're kind of like wings. They fan out. And they're at an angle of 110 degrees, about 6 inches apart, generally speaking.
Now, I have there we go. There's my ORTF, and it's across the room. So you can hear that it's across the room, and you can tell that these mics are in one corner of the room. I did that deliberately to get them far away from me so that I could, like, move my chair around, and I could talk, and I could, you know, open a drawer over there, and I could walk over here. I could hit the microphone. Sorry about that. Close the door. You know, all that. So it's ORTF. It's wider than XY, as you can hear. It's still pretty focused. Would you agree that it's reasonably focused? What would you say about ORTF? Here's another demo. When I first got a set of mics that I could put on a stereo bar to do ORTF with, I took them outside. And I recorded my friend and I playing with one of those big workout balls. We were bouncing it against things outside and just generally being childish and stupid.
So, by the way, ORTF, because somebody asked, stands for Office de Radiofusion Television Francais.
It's a French thing.
That was so blind.
Who notices the... It's wide, it's pretty focused, but it's more open than XY. So there's not the hole in the middle space pair has. And it's not the same kind of hole that the Jekyllin has. It's more focused than that, but it's kind of sort of the best of both worlds. It's open. There is a center point. You can hear it. But there's not a lot of phasing problems. If we were to put this to mono, a lot of stuff wouldn't go away. It would just, obviously, be reduced to mono. You see the difference in XY and ORTF? ORTF is more open. And I like it. It's the best of quasi-binaural because it's open. And it's the cool part of XY because you can focus it. It's not picking everything up. It's two cardioid microphones, so it's just picking up things that are in front and to the side.
When we're asking you guys if you guys are, you know, noticing something, feel free to say something for sake of the recording because the recording doesn't know that you guys are typing.
Yes.
So
and Monica, I'm not monitoring chat. I'm playing with, yeah.
I was going to say that the demo that Derek just played, it sounded more wider. I know that's not good grammar. Than the XY.
That is absolutely correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I guess I was getting confused because that was what I was going to say. And then I think you talked about it being better than an XY. And then I thought maybe I wasn't thinking right. That it had the best of both worlds. It had the ORTF and the XY. I think that's what you just said, Derek.
I like it for recording soundscapes and things of specific areas. So, for example, ORTF in a piano might be a bad idea because you want the instrument to have a stereo spread, but you don't want, like, the lowest note to be on the left and the highest note to be on the far right. In some cases, that might be a little extreme. XY in a piano is brilliant, though.
If you're trying to get a more focused sort of stereo sound but not lose integrity, read the hole in the middle, your XY pair is probably what you want. It's focused, but it has a wide enough spread where you can have that. But ORTF, if you're trying to capture maybe a crowded, you know, an ambience, a crowd as well, or maybe you're trying to catch a wider stereo spread, you might want to use that instead.
Or a choir. Choirs are great for ORTF because you don't want to capture a particular person and you don't want the recording focused around a particular person. You want it focused across a line that goes deep, you know, multiple rows of people. You want to focus it on them. So choirs are great for ORTF, and they're great for quasi-binaural. If you want to capture the choir they're in, ORTF is amazing. If you want to capture the entire everything, then binaural or quasi-binaural is pretty cool.
I think, I could be mistaken, but I do think some people recording concerts, like classical concerts, choirs, and things professionally, I think they do use spaced pairs. I could be mistaken, but I'm sure I've seen that written a couple of places.
I think in some cases they do, but they get the ability to mic up each section of the orchestra too. So like they may use a spaced pair for the ambience, but like they actually get to go in and mic up each section. And then they can kind of fill in the hole when they mix it later. And I've seen that.
Just as another demonstration of the focusedness but width of XY, I have this rather amusing thing. I was trying to record an ambience of a residential area with the school kids coming out and being picked up and cars passing, and some guy decided to do this.
Hiya!
So.
Nice.
That's amusing.
Now, unfortunately, I think Derek's about to break your brain.
I do apologize for this. I really do. But we're going to talk about one of the more freaky mic techniques for miking stereo. This was done by Alan Blumlein, I think in the 30s or 40s, and it's called mid-side. This is a stereo mic technique which relies on phase to make it work. It is the only stereo microphone technique that will give you a good stereo image with microphones that do not match. That's right. You are using microphones that do not match in mid-side, and the microphones are on top of each other. I will explain why. Cardioid microphones are directional. You point them at something, what they are pointed to is that which they pick up. That's the short version. All right. Now, mics that have a figure eight pickup pattern in review pick up are wedge-shaped. Hang on. I know what this is about. If there's any other questions before we get into mid-side, though.
I know it's being mic-specific, but with the ATR2100, I don't have a pop filter or pop shield. Is that the same thing?
Is what the same thing?
Sorry, pop shield and pop filter, are those the same thing?
Yeah, basically, they're meant as the same thing. A pop filter is more generalized, I think.
Yeah.
But a pop shield is the exact round frame meshy thing that I explained earlier.
Okay.
All right. Sorry about that, guys. All right, so mid-side, in review, we have cardioid microphone that picks up that which is pointed to it. And figure eight, usually wedge-shaped microphone. Each side picks up material. The broader sides of the microphone picks up material. So if you've ever been in a studio and you see the big studio condenser mics, they're on their mic stands, they're kind of wedge-shaped things, big, fat. The tops are sort of rectangular with kind of rounded edges. Both the broad sides of those microphones, when they're in figure eight, if they are figure eight, pick up audio, and the top and the sides, the other sides of the microphone, reject audio. So mid-side is the premise that you have a microphone to pick up the middle, which is a cardioid, and then you use the figure eight microphone to pick up things on the sides of the stereo spectrum. So I'm trying to explain this in a way that won't break your brain, because it broke mine for about 4 years. I just used it and liked it. It took a while for me to actually get this, so I'm trying to save you like 4 years of life.
The figure eight mic is kind of placed like 90 degrees sideways, so that's going to capture your sides, your figure eight condenser. And then your cardioid is placed either on top or below your figure eight microphone, but it's pointed directly at whatever it is you're trying to record.
So the way you connect this up is you put the mid microphone, the cardioid, on the left input, so it's on the left, and the figure eight is on the side. Now, that doesn't really sound like it would do very much, but you have to run it through a mid-side decoder. What mid-side decoding does is it says, all right, well, everything in this signal that's in the middle is going to be on the left, and everything that's going to be off to one side or the other is going to come in on the right channel. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the left input, we're going to put it in the center, and then we're going to take the right channel, we're going to flip it out of phase and put that out of phase copy of the right channel on both sides. So what that effectively does is it cancels out the common things that are picked up by the figure eight and the cardioid microphone, and lets all the stuff that's different between the figure eight and the cardioid microphone show up where it belongs in the stereo spectrum. Now, why on earth you'd want to do this is for a couple of reasons. The first is that you can get a smooth, constant stereo image with two microphones that don't match. The second is because it is a format that is the most compatible with broadcast. Because it is phase related, when you put it in mono, everything that the side microphone captures goes away and you're just left with your cardioid. So if your cardioid is picking it up, if you're pointing a mid-side matrix at a group and that cardioid mic is picking up the soloist and getting a little bit of the people that are singing harmony or whatever, if someone's listening to that in mono, that's what they're going to hear. So you know whatever you've got your mid-side array pointed at, you know that's the focal point. You know that nothing is going to happen phase-wise or anything like that, which will break it, which will distort that sound or cone filter part of that sound out of existence or null it in any way. And so that's kind of cool. Another reason you may want to use mid-side is because you can control the width of the image afterwards. When you're going back and you're playing with mid-side, it's as if you have two microphones that you are moving closer together and farther apart. So, demo time. All right. Night Sounds, recorded by yours truly a few years ago. What are you noticing about these Night Sounds?
They're in mono at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Now, that is the mid microphone. It is fed through a mid-side decoder, so you're hearing it in the center. If I were to take that away, it's that. So, I'm going to start bringing in the side microphone. Listen very carefully to the image. Now what happened to it?
It's in stereo.
Mm-hmm. Hear it kind of widen out. Now if you go too far with mid-side, you're just getting the side microphone, and you start to get your hole in the middle there. You hear it?
Yeah.
So the key is to find the spot where you have the kind of image you want, as focused as you want, or as of microphones. Mid-side is in the way our computers encode lossy audio, or lossless audio in some cases, in most cases these days. Your mid-channel, left plus right, and your side channel, left minus right, are how things are split up when they're encoded or when they're transmitted over FM. Ever notice how if you're listening to a radio station and you put it in mono, all the static goes away?
Yeah, I think I've seen that before. Not sure, though.
Like, if you're right on the edge of a station and it's pretty staticky and you have your noise in the background, I don't have a radio connected to the mixer or I would try to set it up. But then you put the station in mono and all that static will just clear off. Yeah, it goes to mono, you lose your stereo image, but you lose a lot of noise. See, it's kind of annoying because a lot of radios these days will adapt if they don't have a very good side. If they can't get a very good link on the 15K subcarrier, they just kill it off and go to mono and you don't really have a say in the matter. But FM broadcast does mid-side, so for those of you who are into radio, you may find that interesting to know that the signal is actually ran through mid-side and sent, with the side channel being the higher subcarrier of the transmitter frequency, so that, you know, it's the first thing to go and not any of the important stuff. So I would mainly focus on XY and spaced pair and binaural and ORTF and things like that, but I wanted to bring up mid-side because it is a standard that people do use. And it is a very powerful thing to play with. And if you really want to audio geek it out, then I could talk about mid-side forever. But I have said enough on the subject, I think, for now.
There's quite a bit of mixing and mastering engineers that actually like to use mid-side. And yeah, it's Derek's obsession as of late as well. So honestly, guys, all these stereo configurations, it really depends what it is that you're trying to record, how much time you have to set it up, and how much time you want to spend, you know, mixing everything down to its constituents.
Mm-hmm. You know, these microphones that you get, like, for the IQ, I think, which one is the...
The mid-side one's the ESQ7.
Seven, yeah. And there's a couple of other stereo microphones that Audio Technica makes that are mid-side based. You'll know they may not say mid-side, but if they have a switch on them to narrow or lengthen the stereo image, you can narrow or widen it out, that's mid-side. And they're just turning up and down the center microphone.
This one actually says mid-side on it. The Zoom IQ7 says mid-side microphone or whatever, or mid-side stereo mic. and I believe it's the IQ6 that is the XY.
And I've heard both, and I like them both. And the Shure VP88's a pretty cool one, too, if you're wanting that sort of
thing. Gary wants to know if binaural is single track. Those are two different sorts of things. I mean, they can be on, a file can be on one single track, but now you're getting into things that we haven't covered yet, retracks.
I was going to say that more depends on where the information from your microphone is going. So here I have an XY microphone plugged into my interface through retrack program so that I can talk to you. What I could do is I could put one of those plugs in one channel, one in the other, and I could record one channel's output onto one track, one channel's output onto the other track. But that's not an inherent feature of the microphone. It's what you choose to do with it.
Yeah.
Adam?
Suppose you didn't have a figure eight pickup pattern and you had a omnidirectional. Could you cheat and use the omnidirectional along with a cardioid to simulate mid-side?
You could try. And the reason I say you could try is because I'm not really sure what would happen to the center image, because the omnidirectional mic's going to pick up what the cardioid does too. So some of the center stuff might actually get canceled out when you decode.
Well, and the other thing too is that the figure eight mic specifically in that configuration is used to record the sides. And a figure eight mic, as you recall, records what's in front and in back of it. It doesn't record all around it. And so if you have an omnidirectional mic trying to record the sides, as Derek said, it's going to record the sides, but it's also going to record the center. So you might get either too much of a center or not one.
So people have used omnidirectionals in figure eights before to get a really wide center. And, you know, you can use the figure eight to reinforce the sides a little bit that way. But it is, with mid-side, essential that you have your figure eight. That is the critical part for the side. Put whatever in the center you want, but you definitely have to have the figure eight for the sides. But, you know, it doesn't hurt to just experiment with stuff. Run stuff through mid-side decoders. It gets really weird when you do. I mix and master that way all the time. I will treat the mid and the side channels separately, and then once they've been treated, I will decode it so it puts the image back the way it's supposed to be.
Adam?
I saw a vocalist once. I don't know how they were doing it, but it looked like there was a mic stand with two microphones taped together on top of each other, pointed right at the vocalist. And I don't know, what the heck do you think they were trying to do with that setup?
I don't know either. My guess is probably they were trying to sing maybe into both of the microphones and then take the better comparison for the song. That's my guess.
For the recording stage, could have been, maybe, and this is a complete guess, but maybe the microphones that they were using had substantially different characters and imparted different qualities to the singer's voice. Maybe one was being fed through some effects, one wasn't, stuff like that.
Could be. I would guess that too. Those are very good guesses.
So I guess if you know the rules, you can break them and see what comes out, and if it sounds
good,
start a new end.
Absolutely.
There are always, I always say this about anything, there are always exceptions to every rule. It's just a matter of finding the exceptions and seeing if they work for you. This is just a general guideline and general rules of how people set up stuff.
Being as I feel I've been trashing space pairs kind of hard, and I wouldn't use them. I would avoid them like the myself, because I am clumsy, because you have to worry about are they directly in line with each other, because you have to critically listen for phase. And yes, I hadn't heard that, but in some specialized circumstances, XY microphones may produce phasing issues, but they're built to be phase resistant. Whereas every time you set up a space pair of microphones, you may come into new phasing issues. But space pairs, I was thinking of a few applications. If you want to record, say, a tennis game, you could put one mic one side of the court, one mic the other, and get a really good stereo field of the serves back and forth. So like I say, it expands a little bit on the point I made that the stereo field is infinitely widenable and narrowable. In fact, I read on one forum someone wanted to record a thunderstorm with microphones positioned either side of his house. So you have the house width is your stereo spectrum, and to get the thunder recorded like that. Also, and this does touch on a question someone asked, and it does get it a bit into multi-tracking, but if you have two microphones that are not connected to each other, each microphone can be its own track. So let's say I want to record the sound of a door. Say, I don't know, a letterbox on a door. I can record it from both sides of the door if I'm careful with my cables, because I can have one microphone of my spaced pair on one side of the door, one microphone the other side of the door. I can post the letter through the letterbox. I can have a kind of a stereo noise. and I can use that same configuration perhaps to record the hinges creaking to get another sound, but I can, you know, then use the sounds independently to different tracks. And maybe you're recording something in spaced pair stereo and something goes wrong with one of the mics, you know, you have another mic as backup, so there's some redundancy there. So spaced pairs are good, and use them if you are not clumsy like me, and you are efficient and quick at setting things up, unlike me. So I felt like I had trashed spaced pairs a bit too much there. Does everyone understand what silica gel actually does, what it's for, why you want it? Because I feel like I rushed that a bit. I just wanted to check if anyone has any questions on anything at all.
I just want to say that nobody, or real quick, that the mics don't always have to be connected for these stereo configurations to work. AB is not the only one where the mics aren't connected. The mics don't have to be connected in mid-side. The mics don't have to be connected in ORTF or XY. It's just how the mics are placed. But they don't have to be connected by a single thing or whatever.
Yeah, the mounting doesn't conduct the sound to the other microphones. Yeah. Question, though. Good thought. And after that, Jessica and I do have a segment on specialized microphones.
Damien had a question first.
Yeah, I wasn't altogether sure on the gel thing, to be honest.
Oh, okay. Silica gel. Tiny packet of crystals. You put it by the capsules of your mic in the packet it comes in its case, like most good microphones come with good cases. Silica gel absorbs water, so it will draw any moisture in the air away from the mic capsules that you really don't want getting damp into itself. It will basically conduct the moisture away from the capsules and away from the microphone to itself, to a degree. You know, obviously don't keep your microphones in damp spaces. That would be stupid and that would be bad. But silica gel is an extra layer of protection which will run out, so replace it regularly. But it's an extra layer of protection against damp getting into your microphone.
So two things we want to talk about really quickly are contact microphones and EM pickup coils. Contact microphones are cool because they don't have a diaphragm. They're just a transducer. So they pick up the vibrations off of things that they touch, and only the things that they touch. So if you bury them in ice, as the ice would thaw or freeze or move or shift, you would hear that from the sound conducting through the ice itself. If you put one against, say, a clock or a timer, it's ticking. It's the only sound you'll hear. You'll just hear anything that is resonating off of the inner workings of that device. Now, of course, if you put one in a cup, like I did last semester, because I had one, and I had the cupperphone, and that's how I introduced class. I was on the cupperphone, and people were amused by this. The cup was the diaphragm of the microphone. I'd talk into the cup, and the transducer, the contacts mic, would pick it up. Who's you touch
or a
it?
Doppler for baby hearts.
Yep.
Yep. That's essentially what it actually is. The medical thing, yeah, like Justin said, it's actually a specialized thing, but it's kind of a form of contact mic. If you put it against the woman's stomach, you can hear the baby's heart beating.
But if you talk into it or at it, you don't hear yourself. Damien.
Is that how you would record a heartbeat then, with a contact mic?
Yeah, I... Yeah,
that's the best way, really.
Best way. I think I have one still. I wonder where it went. Let me see if I can find it, guys. Hang on. I can try this.
Derek, last semester, stuck the contact mic to, I want to say, like his neck or his wrist, and you could actually hear the blood rushing through his veins.
Let's see. Do I have it?
Wow.
I have. No, I thought I had my contact mic with me.
That was sad. There is no contact mic to be found.
No. I am sad because I lost it. It's a very small thing. You can get them on Amazon for like $20. They're also in instrument pickups as well. So like
yeah,
the guitar
I was gonna say that.
Pickup would basically be a form of a contact mic. A piezo transducer is the most common form we use. Those instrument pickups that you could attach to acoustic instruments like mandolins or ukuleles or whatever, those are piezo transducers. They're contact mics. So if you can put them on your body...
Do you have the demo thing with the guitar?
Yes, I do, in fact.
Before you get to that, can I just ask, are contact mics, I don't have much experience with contact mics, much as I would love to own one, are they always noisy, no matter the price range? Because I've heard they're like the easiest type of microphone to home make, and a lot of people home make their contact mics. I would shy away from doing that for fear of noise getting into a homemade device, because obviously you still want your recordings clean.
Well, it's a high Z input. Like the impedance of most of these things are high Z. So
they are pretty noisy, to be fair. But you can even get them for like $5 on Amazon. So they're not expensive. Ray had a question.
Would these microphones use the XLR input as well?
Well, the ceramic contact mic itself is literally a piezo transducer. So it's a ceramic disc, pretty much. And you solder whatever cord and connector you want to it. A piece of brass with a little bit of plating on it so that it... I mean, that's it. Like, it's a very simple device, very fragile.
So they're usually buried in things and mounts and with Velcro or tape on them that you can attach to things.
So in other words, they can use any number of connectors. The ones that Derek had didn't use an XLR connector. Didn't it use an eighth inch connector, you said?
Yeah, it was a quarter inch XLR adapter. I had to feed it into the board that way.
Sounds a bit kind of tinny.
So can you guys kind of hear how it sounds boxy? Like, because it's physically inside the chassis of the guitar?
I was going to say you can really hear their fingerings in the guitar.
And that's a good and a bad thing about contact mics. You get everything the chassis resonates, good and the bad. They're also drum triggers, too. So if you've seen people fit triggers to drums where the acoustic drum can trigger electronic samples, that's how those basically work. They're just contact mics. And when they detect a certain amount of sound, then they'll send a spike off to trigger whatever plays the sample. EM pickup coils are the next specialized thing I want to talk about. And EM coils are basically a little tiny magnetic coil of wire, which, when placed against something that emits a magnetic field, will obviously pick that up and send it down the cable so that you can then amplify or record that magnetic flux. Some hearing aids have these to pick up sound directly from the speakers of devices, but you can also, for better or for worse, use them to diagnose, is my iPhone on or not? I can't see. I don't have a light probe. You could put it up to the phone and listen to the EM of the iPhone or of your tablet or whatever. Recreational use, I put them to, and Jessica has as well, in a demo that she is going to show. She used one to record one of her son's toys electronically. So anything, even if it doesn't have an output, can be recorded directly with an EM pickup coil. If for some reason there's a toy you want to sample something straight from, or a keyboard, or something that you want to record directly that may not have an output, if you have a coil, you can put the coil up to its speaker and get the output that way.
Yep. The thing to take note in this demo is that it shows both an acoustic recording of the toy and it shows the electronically recorded version. The thing to pay attention to in both the recordings is that it's using two of the things we've just talked about. It's using an XY array when I'm talking and showing the acoustics of it, and then you will also hear the difference when it's actually being recorded via the coil, which in this particular case, my coil was a sort of suction cup thing that you put on the toy, or yeah, in this case, the toy, to record its electronic things that it's putting out. Even though it does have a speaker, you'll hear how kind of different it sounds from the acoustic side, from its little acoustic tiny speaker output, as opposed to what it electronically generates.
Greetings. This is a recording of two different toys. Both first will be from the acoustic perspective because it's easier. I have with me here a lion that sings. Well, it doesn't sing, it plays. And I have an ABC CD player thingy that sings. I had a guitar, but I don't know where it is. The acoustic sounds of these toys are as follows. Here's the lion. And it plays different parts of the song. There's that acoustic sound. This is the ABC thingy acoustic sound. Those will be the toys that we will be coiling in the next recording. That was just kind of an acoustic sound, so you kind of know what they are in the regular everyday environment.
felt more bassy and stuff.
Now with the CD, the ABC thing, what do you guys hear about it? Now I know my ABC. It's aliasing, isn't it?
There was one other thing, if you heard right near the end of the coil, did anyone notice anything else besides Derek's aliasing comment? Let me see if I can get to it again. Sophie, listen. That. Did you hear that?
Yeah, that is...
Yeah, very annoying buzz.
Correct. Does anyone remember what problem that might be from what we discussed?
The way things were plugged in me?
Right, it wasn't properly shielded.
Well, this is the problem with these coil recordings, is they are, by their very nature, not shielded. They pick up every electromagnetic thing, and I've made some electromagnetic recordings myself, and you have to be really careful where you make those recordings, because if you are near where socket extension leads are, if you are near where wires run, you'll get that buzz in the background of all your recordings. Like, electromagnetic coils are, by their nature, very noisy as well.
And they don't make yet. Maybe one of us should build one, just because. A Faraday cage with a coil in it, so you put your whatever you're trying
that
to coil.
That would be cool.
Actually, it would. Oh well, now I have to go do it.
Does everyone understand what a Faraday cage is?
Nope. I've heard of them.
You all have one. A Faraday cage is basically a structure that keeps electromagnetic radiation from getting in or out, and microwaves come with them to keep the microwaves from getting out. And what Derek was suggesting, which I think is an excellent idea, is that you have your coil within a Faraday cage and a means to open it and put in what you want to record, so that you could record just the electromagnetic interference you want rather than the electromagnetic interference you don't.
That would be kind of cool.
So you put your thing of choice in the microwave. You just don't turn the microwave on.
It's a great little sound booth.
Yep. That's it, guys.
Hold on. Derek, read your message real quick. Because I asked you a question.
I have one other demo, and Jessica wants to do one.
So I want Justin to do his first, because we're on the topic of coils still. So Justin, go ahead and do yours.
So we were talking about how you can use these electromagnetic coils to tell if your iPhone is on. You can also use them for sound design. What do you guys think this noise is? Just name in chat whenever you have a guess.
Go ahead and try and guess, guys.
Sounds like a hard drive spinning up. Hard drive spinning up.
Not a hard drive. There'll be another noise in a minute, which might give you a little bit more of a clue.
I was going to say a CD-ROM drive.
It is a CD-ROM drive. It is. Any minute, it's going to spin up a bit more. Get even louder. And a little piece of... Oh, no, it's not. No, we've had enough. And that faint little noise at the end, it was a MacBook CD drive. It's one of those ones with a slot in the side, and you slide the CD in and it sucks it in. That was the motor sucking in the CD. Or actually, in that case, ejecting the CD. I was going to say something else. Oh, yeah. For those of you taking the Reaper module, that sound will reappear. It forms the basis for a project I did. That is the alien buggy.
Oh, that thing. Okay, so before we depart, Eric has one more demo that he's going to show you guys. I want you guys, and I'm sure Derek really wants you guys, to guess that same guitar that we heard earlier, what stereo configuration it's in or being recorded in.
Yep, so there are two perspectives of this guitar. The first is a contact mic perspective. And the second, I want to know what your perspective is. right, so there's the stereo. What would you guys guess?
And I'll pipe right up and say I don't have a clue.
Damien?
So if y'all don't, then don't feel bad.
I'm joining in with Justin on that one. I don't know.
I'm going to guess it's a space pair.
Okay, well, let's look at some of the differences. What are some of the contact mic perspective and the other perspective?
Adam had a question or a guess.
Well, I can say I don't think it's XY because it doesn't have a real strong center image.
No, I was just saying it sounds like, is it the ORTFU? Whatever the initials were.
That's what I was going to say.
You guys have amazing ears.
I would just like to say that Derek/I are jerks.
The reason I say you guys have amazing ears sort of is because that was the same recording.
But it sounded wider the second time.
That, yes, I said it was the same recording, but not the same rendering. You see, what happened was I used two things that we'll talk about when we talk about effects. I used an EQ to get rid of some of the boxiness of the guitar from the contact mic perspective. And I used an impulse response of my living room, which I recorded using an ORTF setup, to make it sound like the guitar was in my living room with a little bit of reverb on top of it. So that focus, that lack of focus, was because of the ORTF impulse response that I made. And the reverb was because of the reverb plugin
that he used.
Yes. So that was just synthesized.
I think the key takeaway from that demo, guys, is that contact mic recordings can be useful. And you can, with post-processing, make one microphone sound like another.
And this is all stuff that we will teach you how to do. So this is all within the scope of your abilities.
Unless anyone has any questions, I believe that's all we got.
What are we doing Monday?
Oh boy, Monday is everyone's favorite. We are going to do Windows Audio Subsystems.
And the next study
vital
group.
Vital stuff, guys. Yeah. Very heavy and dull.
Yeah. And the study group for that week is Mixers and Interfaces. So those of you who are on the edge or who might not necessarily know how to buy or use a mixer might want to attend this one.
Well, so it will be a core class in a study group slot, because we'll also be covering gain staging at considerable depth, or rather more depth than we covered it on Monday. So everyone needs to be a part of that study group.
Would you tell us what our homework assignment actually is?
It's just more helping you toward ultimately what you are, what we talked about on Monday, which is, you know, what do you have and what do you need to do the kinds of things that you want, to get the kind of things you want out of your audio setup.
You're going
to
tell us what it is that you have, and then start researching on what it is that you need, or asking for help, or looking for bulletins or forums where people might talk about the things that you need for the audio applications that, you know, or workflow that you're using.
Is that just related to microphones?
Yes.
For now.
At this stage.
At this stage. The microphones first, and then your audio, we'll talk when we talk about audio interfaces and things, that's when it kind of branches out.
Microphone/accessories.
So the minute summary of everything that you have learned and what your assignment is tell us what you've got, then tell us what you need. What you need is going to be dictated by what you want to do. And so condenser microphones, good for quiet, detailed sounds. Dynamic microphones, good for loud sounds or live vocals. Some voiceovers like dynamic mics. Pickup pattern. Do you want to record interviews? Two people sitting across a desk? You're going to want a figure of eight microphone. Do you want to record directionally? You point the mic at something, other things get ignored. You're going to want a cardioid microphone. Or even if you're a sound designer, we haven't talked about this much, or a filmmaker, you're going to want a super cardioid microphone. Extra, extra, extra rejection. Do you want stereo stuff? Do you want mono stuff? What accessories do you want? What's your price bracket? What's your budget? Do you want electret condensers, stuff you can use with your computer easily? Do you want XLR mics? What do you need to achieve the aspirations, the dreams that made you take this course? So get in touch with us. Join forums. Forums are good things. There's lots of pretentious people on forums that think you cannot record anything good unless you spend a minimum of what it would cost to buy a small house. But ignore that and talk to us, and good luck.
Good luck.
Good luck.
be better on submit audio. We're going to be here on the Skypes over the coming days, especially now that we're getting into more stuff and software and things that people might kind of need some help on. So just, you know, if you see Kavi Audio online, guys, that means we're around but not necessarily available. So if you want to message and see if someone's available to help you, if you see it online, please send a message to Kavi Audio. And if we get back to you, then, you know, obviously we're around and we'll definitely try to help you.
Yeah, like, you don't just have to say, I cannot do my assignment, help me. Like, if you have supplementary questions to the material that we've covered,
exactly.
If you have perhaps more specialized questions about the material we've covered, like a particular mic or whatever, you can ask us and we'll do some research. We'll talk to you about that. When's this assignment due by, Jess? I think they should have at least contacted us to ask us stuff by Monday.
But yeah, that's what I said.
When do we need? Do we know? Did you say when we needed written things? I missed it. If you did,
sorry. I said it. I was pretty sure I said it on Monday. That it was due by this coming Monday. But yeah, it's everything
okay,
is
cool.
Due by Monday, guys. So like Justin said, the mics you have and the mics you will eventually need, should you need more than what you have. This assignment will be expanded upon, but this is the first part. This assignment will be expanded upon when we talk about interfaces and Windows subsystems and things like that, because it's more equipment that you may or may not need.
Should I just ask my question now? I mean, I think
that's fine.
Could probably benefit from it. Okay. You were explaining with the whole pop thing, you could use a sock. How would you do that? Would it go on your microphone, like which way?
When we say pop sock, we don't actually mean a sock. You could jerry-rig and use a sock.
You actually could use a sock.
Be ideally constructed. It's by no means ideal. When we say pop sock, we mean the bit of foam that goes over the end of your mic to shield it from plosives and, to a small extent, wind noise.
Some people call it mic condoms, just for, you know, laughs. It is a type of pop filter. You were saying, you know, you were talking about pop filters earlier. Pop filter is kind of a generalized term, whereas pop shields, pop socks, / windscreens, those are different types of pop filters.
Not to be confused, I hasten to add, with the wood condom I was mentioning earlier, which is the specific wind protection device that goes over your whole microphone, whereas pop socks / windscreens just go over the end.
So this is my mic with the pop sock, which is this little foamy thing. See? So you can hear that. And I'm talking kind of at a 45-degree angle from it. So I don't really plosive as much. But even if I put it near my face with the pop sock on, then I'll start to plosive, you see. I'll pop. As you can see now, I have kind of back at that 45-degree angle. But if I were to take this pop sock off, this is my mic without the pop sock. And you can hear that it's easier to pop my P's and T's and D's.
I hope you're still recording, because I stopped mine, and this is some really good stuff.
I actually am still recording.
Her S's. Oh, good.
Even her S's.
I've got it, too, actually.
On her S's.
I think.
So this Shure SM7 comes with actually two windscreens, two pop socks, as they're calling them. I call them the windscreen of light and the windscreen of darkness, because the one that it comes with stock in the box is this one, which is very small, and I've put it back on as the mic comes in the box. I think with it, it's pretty, well, it takes a little bit of high frequency off. Would you agree, or would you say it's pretty transparent? So if I take this off, and I'm speaking into this mic, hello, microphone, popping P's and T's and S's, and well, it's not T's and S's so much, but the P's pop a little bit, so there's that. Put this on, and here is the windscreen of light, as I call it, the little, that one. And it's existing, and I'm talking. Am I popping as much, or have there been any other changes? What do you guys notice?
There's not as much popping.
But there's still some popping.
A little bit.
A little bit. Not bad, though.
You sound more bassy.
Because I'm able to be up closer to it. Now, this... Pop this off.
Where is the other one? The other one? This guy right here.
Oh, the big boofy one.
Windscreen of darkness and or the big boofy windscreen. Put this on.
That's a technical term, guys. Don't worry about it.
Yes. All right, now this is what I call the windscreen of darkness. The big boofy windscreen. Yes, boofy is not a... we'll say it's technical because it's very important to say boofy. It's a fun word. What are you noticing about this particular windscreen as I'm talking into the Shure with it on? What do you notice?
I think you can get away a little more. Like, you're not... I don't know. I feel like you're popping as you were with the other two.
But what is... with that sort of protection...
What's the price?
Can kind of figure out what he's sacrificing?
Yeah, what is the price of the protection?
Your voice sounds flatter to me.
Flatter in what way?
Higher frequencies.
are, what about them?
You don't hear them as good.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yes. That's it. Price for the popping pee protection from the big boofy windscreen of the SM7B is the sacrifice of highs.
You can actually kind of hear it too in his eshes because he kind of sounds, over-exaggerating it, but a little bit like that.
Yep, it's doing that to it. Now, if I were tracking someone and they were spewing forth vocals of great volume and they were very popish, I'd be like, stop, hang on, let's do this. But in my particular case, I prefer it sans both windscreens and a pop shield, which I have placed in front of the microphone. So now I have the advantages of popping pee protection, and I have the advantages of no windscreen in front of the mic. So I get everything.
Oh, Randy had a question.
I was going to ask about my single little Logitech headset microphone that I own. I noticed in making some little sample recordings that I really have quite the background noise of a kind of a hiss or a static. Mm-hmm. And in my report, I said I thought I had a dynamic microphone, but now I think I'm changing my answer to a condenser. But I was just curious, is that my microphone or is that my onboard sound card in my computer?
Okay, well, there's a way to test that. Likely it's a combination of both, but do you have anything else you could plug that microphone into that would record, like a recorder, like an Olympus or another sound card or anything like that?
You know, right now I don't, although I do want to buy a just basic recorder to record field interviews, I guess, for lack of a better term.
And I think that microphone is that microphone using USB or is it plugging into, like, how is it being plugged up?
It's plugged into the audio card. It's got two plugs that are all TSR plugs for the audio and then a separate
TSR.
Is
the microphone
TRS, for the microphone.
Though, Randy? I'm curious. Because most of them are TS.
It is. I looked at that after you sent me that, and it definitely is, unless I don't have a clue, which that's always possible, too. So.
Okay. Well, that's different. But what sound card do you have in your computer?
Whatever onboard thing came with it.
So you'll know that by next week. All right, fair enough. So you'll know that.
And I'm going to go to one of my computers that's hidden in the basement, old computer, and pull a Sound Blaster card out and stick it in there and just to see if there's a difference. But, I mean, they're old Sound Blaster cards. I haven't looked at any sound cards since the onboard ones were good enough to do speech output.
Sure.
I used to have this really cool Sound Blaster Odyssey 2ZS card back in the day. That was really neat. And so some of those Sound Blaster cards were actually really, really cool. But some of them were not so cool. And actually, I'll reference Sound Blaster a lot next week because they're some of the cards that changed the most throughout the years as we talk about the different kinds of subsystems.
Yeah, they were the movers and shakers and makers and fakers of sound.
I had a USB Odyssey and it was...
yeah. All right, guys. It's been fun.
Thanks, guys.
Yep, we will see you guys next week on Monday.
All right, then.
Great. Have a good weekend, everybody.
You too.
You too.